Thanks for listening in and joining us on the Australian Fitness Podcast. I'm your host, Russell Jarrett, physical performance coach, health club owner, fitness educator, and yes, all-round fitness geek. I'm the guy who probably trains on Christmas Day. I would rather lift a barbell than drink a beer, and I'm a student of all things training and physical improvement. So what are we all about here at the Australian Fitness Podcast? Let me set the scene for you. If you've dabbled in training, exercise, weight loss, muscle gain, getting stronger, getting leaner, running further, or have even the slightest interest in fitness and training, I think you'll get a lot out of this podcast.
G'day, Groovers. Welcome to another installment of The U Project. Hi, Melissa.
Hello. How are you?
Look, I'm pretty good, thanks. I'm pretty good for a Tuesday. I'm doing my very best. Is it a Tuesday?
It is a Tuesday, believe it or not.
It's Tuesday all day. Have you been productive this morning as we record this? It is 12:26 in the PM. Midday is just gone.
Have been productive. Thank you very much. It's been good. We had a good night last night with the mentoring program as well. All is happening.
We did. And we are tentatively, well, we're organizing a few things. One of the things that we're organizing potentially is the U Project Conference at Correct. The end of the year at potentially at Jeff's Shed. What do we call that? The convention, Melbourne
Convention. Or potentially February 2022, one or the other.
Ah, fuck February 22. let's do it this year. Let's do it this year. Fuck the pandemic. Hey, that's what we should get some of those T-shirts with our little brand on the bottom. They would sell like hotcakes. Fuck the pandemic. And a big one of them on the back, a big, you know, middle finger on the back. So today's a little bit different. Or before I jump in, I wanted to say one other thing, and that is, everyone, you might notice, in fact, you'll definitely notice if you're a regular, that in the middle of the podcast now are some ads. And I know some of you are going, fuck those middle of the podcast ads. Hey, Harps, fuck your ads. Well, look, I kind of get it. But also, the reason we do that is because we need money. And so part of that, let's be honest, we need money. And none of you are paying for this, and we want to keep it that way. So rather than having a subscription or being on Patreon or some of those platforms where you pay money, we're doing it the other way, the old-fashioned way, and we're going to interrupt the fuck out of you periodically with about 60 seconds of ads. So we love you, but you might just have to suck it up, or don't tell anyone I suggested this. You could fast forward through it, of course. Anyway, apologies, but it is a necessary evil. So we are ads at the start, ads at the finish, ads in the middle, but we, as always, sorry for the inconvenience. We got to do it, but we appreciate your support. Today, thanks for asking. Today, we're having a chat with two of my friends. Both of them have been on the podcast before, Brad Cunningham and Russ Jarrett. They are both gym owners. They are both fitness professionals. They are both leaders. They're both very good at what they do. They're pioneers in a way. And what I wanted to do was get the boys bit of a round cyber table today so we could all talk about where the fitness industry is at and just fitness in general. I'm not exactly sure where we'll go, but it's certainly, since I started in 1982, back in 1982 when Melissa was just a fucking glint in her father's eye, in 1982 till now, 39 years, fair to say there's been something of an evolution. Not too many squash courts around these days, but there was a lot of them back then. Russ Jarrett, g'day.
G'day, Craig. G'day, Brad and Mel. How are you all?
We're good.
We're all very good. Bradley, hello to you, son.
Good afternoon, everyone. How are we doing?
We're doing very well. We're doing very well. Rusty, when did you get in the fitness industry?
Well, you know, I started working in it in, I reckon, 1987, 88, but my first exposure to the fitness industry, this is a story I tell often and I'll be quick, was as a member. So that's kind of when I first had an experience with the fitness industry. I joined a gym which was near where I was living at the time. The gym was called Fitzpatrick's. I don't think it even exists anymore. Mm. But at the time of me joining it, it was one of the bodybuilding meccas of Melbourne. Mm. And that was an experience, let me tell you.
You would have fitted right in there because I could imagine you as a young boy, you would have, like a fucking pipe cleaner with sneakers on, you would have rocked in there and just intimidated everyone.
Well, I remember walking in. The guy on the front desk was a gorilla who was wearing like one of those T-shirts, and he I don't reckon he'd cut the sleeves off it. He'd just rip the sleeves off it, and that was his uniform on reception. And when I walked in, I swear he was thinking to himself, is this kid lost? Are you lost, mate? Are you looking for the bathroom or something?
Yeah. Are you on your way to the tennis club and somebody stole your sneakers or something? What's going on?
That's exactly right.
Yep. And how uncomfortable did you then train there?
Yep. So I joined Fitzpatrick. They wrote me a program. They nearly killed me. I remember the first workout went for nearly 90 minutes. Couldn't move my arms for about 2.5 weeks, but I stuck at it, and I just watched these big gorillas train, and, you know, I learned a lot. I mean, it was intimidating as hell for a young guy who was, like you say, a pipe cleaner in sneakers, but you know, because I was determined to change something about my physique, I figured, well, these guys look pretty damn strong and fairly muscular, so they must know something, and I just watched them train, and I just observed, and I can remember that probably about after 3 weeks of training there, one gorilla walked up to me and he said, mate, you're doing okay. Hang in there. Like, I watch you, you're here, you know, you're having a crack. You're here on a regular basis. Keep going. You'll be right. And if you need any help, I'll be over in the corner.
Oh, wow.
I was accepted into the room.
Well, you were suiting up. You were showing up. You were having a crack, mate. That's all people want. Brad, when was the first time you trained, as in, you know, something remotely that looked like a gym session or a workout?
Well, I'm sitting here quietly laughing to myself because I think you two would have T-shirts older than me, let alone the amount of time that I've been in the industry. So
steady.
For me, I always played footy growing up, so my first experience was sneaking into the little shed at the back of the footy oval and, you know, just pumping some weights away by myself in there. And then my sort of first job in the industry was a traineeship at North Melbourne Recreation Centre. They were starting the big redevelopment there of the North Melbourne Footy Club, and they put a council gym in there, and I was part of that kind of setup and getting that gym going, which was a great experience. But that was kind of my first real job in the industry, and it sort of grew from there.
Tell us what's the name of your business and what, because, okay, before we do this, you guys tell me if I've left anything out. I've been thinking about how when I started in 82, literally there were gyms. Most of them, like, they'd have a weight room, they'd have aerobics, they'd generally have a sauna or spa. You wouldn't want to go near the fucking spa with a javelin. And skanky change rooms, but there were no 24-hour gyms. There were no ladies' gyms. There were no. So this is what I've got on my list of fitness businesses that exist at the moment. I'm sure I've forgotten a few. So Step Into Life, Preggy Bellies, ladies' gyms, boutique gyms, the Boathouse in Rye is one of my favourite boutique gyms. It's amazing, with the lovely Rosa, PT Studios, Arena in Bay Street, in Bay Road in Cheltenham. I'm going to plug some of my friends. Fuck it. Group training, 24-hour gyms, mobile PTs, exercise physiology centres, EP studio. What do you call them, Russ? Would you call them clinics almost?
Yeah, exercise physiology clinics, yeah.
Yep, Kaiser, which is a newish thing, Pilates, yoga, boot camps, online training options, athletic conditioning centres, sports-themed gyms like 12-round fitness, old people gyms. I put me in that group. So there's a gym up the road from me on the corner of South and Napionawe, which is French for Nepean Highway. That's called, I forget what that's called, oldpeople.com or something. That's for over 55s. Olympic lifting centres, powerlifting clubs and centres. Dean Morby from Castlemaine. He was on the show. MMA training facilities, of course, CrossFit, which we call boxes, mobile trainers who go to people's houses, home PT facilities. I reckon I know 15 trainers who have a studio at home and people come there, boxing facilities, martial arts, not just mixed martial arts, but, you know, karate or taekwondo or muay thai or whatever it is. I mean, there are. Have I forgotten anything obvious, Brad?
Well, I just learned of this new franchise that's coming out where they're putting rowers on Pilates beds.
No.
So it's like cardio on Pilates. But apparently
How does that? So you're putting rowers on Pilates. So you're talking about putting a rower on a reformer bed?
Sorry, a reformer bed. Yeah. So Carly was just telling me about it the other day. She said she just popped up on her social media. Yeah, a rower on a reformer bed.
So what do you think's going well in the fitness industry, Russ? You look around, you've got, firstly, Brad, tell us about your business and your gym so people know what you do right now.
So we run most, like our core business is boot camps or group classes. And then we do semi-private personal training on the side. And then our sort of top tip, we do some one-on-one, you know, more customized specific stuff for a small group of people as well. But our core thing is boot camps.
Yeah, but tell people about your facility because you have a kick-ass facility.
Yeah, so we've got an old factory that we've spent the last 2013, we're in another building, but the last sort of 5-6 years decking this factory out. So we've got a big 650-square facility, you know, big bit of turf down the middle, and then on the sides our gym stuff, you know, your cables and benches and all that sort of thing.
No, I was just going to say it's an awesome setup, and I'm not just saying that. It's one of the better ones I've seen in Australia. So lots of space for coaching and specific conditioning and groups, and it's good. It's just a really good facility. And do you still have that other one in Echuca?
Euroa.
Euroa, so, sorry.
Yeah.
So I knew it was north and started with E.
Close. So that facility is a little different. It was similar to this, but a smaller version. But, you know, the nature of, I suppose, the country in a small town, finding staff and things like that, we've kind of scaled it down, and now it's a 24-hour gym. We do a little bit of that sort of group PT on top of that, but it's mostly just a 24-hour gym there now.
Awesome. Rusty, tell us about what's your business called and what is it?
Yeah, so Infinity Health Club is where I'm based. It's a 24-hour facility in Kyabram, regional Victoria. We've been operating since 2013. On top of that basic 24-hour model, we have a lot of group exercise classes as well. We have a Pilates arm to the business. We have a small indoor pool where we do swimming lessons for kids and aqua classes for the older adults. So it's a multidisciplinary health and fitness center, and it services the needs of the town and surrounding communities.
Has it ever occurred to you that it's somewhat over-engineered, your facility?
Well. Sometimes that occurs to me, but that's actually, you know, we did that for a very specific reason, because I think that certainly in the regional areas, it's been a long time or too long since, you know, gyms were really well equipped and really well fitted out and really diverse in terms of their offerings to people. And I think to answer your question, which you may have been going to pose, you know, so many different fitness facilities and so many different offerings have flooded the market since the late 80s, early 90s. And there's a number of reasons for that. But I think probably what underpins it all is that people are trying their hardest to find their point of difference. They're trying to make themselves appear different, be different, sound different. And in an effort to do that, we're going down this sometimes crazy path of putting rowers on top of reformer boots in an effort to be different.
Yeah, I think, you know, Russ is right. We can get caught up in the noise, and people are trying to, you know, find the next sexiest thing that people are going to, you know, take on. And I think at the end of the day, some of the things that are never going to go, you know, go out of fashion, that personalized service, that human aspect, that, you know, professional, you know, I can't tell you how many, and I've actually had trainers myself where I booked a personal training session for myself, and they cancel a session all the time. They're changing times around. Like, being professional and on time and consistent with your experience and your service, now that stuff's not going to go out of fashion. I think, yes, there'll be always new exciting things coming out, and people will jump on them and try them out. But at the end of the day, I think people are always going to circle back to that human experience. And I think we learned that through COVID, where, yes, it got us through with the virtual training, all that sort of stuff, but people were just craving that human interaction, and you can't, you know, you can't beat that. And to some degree, I don't think you can train, you know, teach people that, you know, in terms of other coaches and things. It's something you, I think you inherit.
Brad, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I would add another element to that. And I think what the fitness industry found out through the whole coronavirus chaos of last year especially, and we're still on the back end of some of that chaos, but what we found out was that gyms, I don't think we realized how much gyms and fitness centers were part of that human connection. People started to understand that actually, you know what, I think I'm going to the gym to get fitter, leaner, lighter, stronger, but in actual fact, I'm actually going to the gym to hang out with my friends, see people that I like, see people that I have a common goal with. And people didn't realize that until they were told they couldn't go to their gyms for a number of months. And then they realized, hang on, I'm actually not going just to train. I'm going to look after my mental health and connect with people.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're both on the money. And we all know people who are awesome at what they do. And what they do is also done by a lot of other people. But for some reason, they make more dough. For some reason, they're always booked out. For some reason, they have a waiting list. For some reason, I had this experience years ago, Rusty. By the way, Russ and I worked together for quite a while at St Kilda Footy Club. And also we owned a gym together in Caulfield. But I don't even know when this was, but it was probably 25 years ago, one of the first times I got asked to go to a gym to basically talk to them about building their personal training program. And it was in Perth. So I flew right across the other side of the country. This guy had read about me in an article which was in one of the, I think, Network magazine or one of those fitness industry things about Harper's, and it was early days and not many people were doing it. Everyone was stumbling and bumbling and the accreditation was dodgy at best and everyone was trying to figure out how to do this weird thing called personal training that apparently was a fad. It's not going to last, by the way. It's just a fad. People are not going to keep paying that. It's ridiculous. Anyway, I went over there. This guy had a gym and he had eight gym instructors or exercise professionals who worked on the gym floor. It's quite a big gym. And all of them were doing bits and pieces of personal training as well as their normal gym shifts. And they all wanted to do it because obviously the gym instructor rate ain't nothing like the personal training rate. Anyway, and he kind of gave me a bit of a brief and I was talking to them Saturday afternoon and Sunday. I arrived there Friday night. I went into the gym on Saturday morning. Nobody really knew who I was because we didn't have social media and my face was not familiar or recognizable. So I was just a bloke in the gym. And I actually stayed in the gym for about 3 or 4 hours. I did a really slow workout. I took a few notes. I walked over and I opened the filing cabinets and read people's programs to see what was being prescribed. Probably shouldn't have done that. Oh, well. And I just watched the trainers and the gym instructors. And there was this one lady, I can't remember her name, but she was, older than me. I was probably 35 and she was probably 45. And she came up and she said to me, she introduced herself, said, "Hi, I'm such and such. Are you okay? Can I help you with anything?" Because obviously I was new. I said, "No, I'm just having a look around. I'm just doing a workout." She goes, "Have you been here before?" I said, "No, I'm just here." She didn't know that I was the guy that was going to be talking to her in a few hours. And I, had a chat with her and she said, "Okay, well, I'm around. I'm here most of the morning. If you need anything, just yell out. Enjoy your workout." And she was so lovely and so charming, right? Now, all of the other gym instructors on the floor walked past me, all of them. None of them even acknowledged me, let alone spoke to me. None of them looked me in the eye. None of them said hello. And then before we got started in the afternoon, I had a meeting with the boss and I said, "So tell me what's going on. How many sessions a week do you do of PT?" And he said, "We do about 80. I said, "Well, that's not terrible." And I think at this stage, Harper's, we were doing probably about 500, which is a lot for a PT center. But 80, considering they had lots of other sources of income, revenue streams, and they were just starting out, 80 was pretty good. And I said, "Great. So what's the split? Who is it all? Do they all do 5 or 6 each?" And he goes, "No, there's one lady, one of my staff, she does half of them and the rest do the half between them." I go, "Is that person's name whatever?" I forget, I knew her name then. Let's say Gail. And he goes, it is. How do you know that? And I go, because she's got the best people skills and she gives a fuck. And all the others walked past me. None of them even acknowledged me. And then I pointed that out when we did the workshop. How do you think that went down? Mm. And nobody wants to know that. Nobody wants to know that they're the problem. They always want to go, oh, it's just there's no market for it here, or that, you know, ultimately if, and this is not just true for personal training or fitness programming or gym owning, it's true for so many different things. If you are great with people and you have integrity and you give a fuck and you look them in the eye and you remember their name, like I didn't remember Gail's, then you really do yourself a service and you increase your chances of, you know, winning rattles.
Yeah, I think I was going to touch on this just before you actually said that, which is funny, but I see often so many coaches and trainers and whatever, they almost want to tell the client how smart they are and all the knowledge they have and kind of, you know, speak at people in the gym when they're training them. And, you know, it's funny because this is our motto for our team this year has been be human, be authentic and be caring. You know, and for us, our business is purely about that human aspect and that level of care and remembering people's names, remembering their dog's names, their kids' names, and asking them about their weekend. And, you know, you don't have to be the most talented and the most qualified in our industry to do well. And I think for me, building up and why I, you know, we're so busy and I did so well early on getting busy with clients is that I did those things. I walked around, I spoke to people, I got to know them and offered it, you know, help. And for us during the pandemic, same thing, you know, we couldn't do our normal service, but our goal from day one was to continue to show up, continue to provide as much education and support and just continue to give to our community. And I think that's how we got through okay. But I think that's a message for all coaches and trainers is to be human and, you know, show you that you care about people.
Yeah. I don't think we can get too much of that. I'm wondering where, I wrote a book years ago. I want to know your thoughts on this. So I wrote a book. The first book I ever wrote, it was called Fatitude. Russ remembers it. It was essentially a book about the psych. It wasn't a very good book, by the way. It was okay. Some people actually love it, but, and thanks to Mum and Auntie Marge. But it was essentially a book about the psychology of getting in shape. And you two boys and Melissa and most of my listeners have heard me bang on about the fact that getting in shape is, it's a bit about your body, but it's also, it's almost like getting in shape physically, whatever that means to you, fitter, lighter, lighter, leaner, stronger, as Rusty said before. Getting in shape is almost the byproduct of managing your mind and your emotions. It's almost like that's the consequence of getting your head right, your decision-making right, your thinking right, your behaviors, your operating system, your protocol, your lifestyle. Get all that shit right and the body is just the consequence. And so I've always been very much about working with the person more than with the body, even though, you know, obviously that people come for that reason. How do we, and I don't actually have a quick answer to this. And so either of you, how do we, you know, without overstepping the boundaries of what we're qualified to do, how do we help people to manage their mind and emotions and choices and behaviors, as well as teaching them how to lift shit and how to squat and what macros and micros are? Because we're like, are we blurring the line? Because we know that the best trainers are the ones that are awesome with people, and the best fitness professionals and doctors and physios are awesome with people, not just good with anatomy and physiology and biomechanics and nutrition and energy systems. So I guess my question is, you know, do you think that that's going to be an evolution where we start to not just work with bodies, but in a much broader and deeper sense, work with humans and their bodies?
I think we're getting much better at it. You know, the industry has come a long way over the past sort of, you know, 20, 30 years. We're better at it. I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where we've nailed it, because there are, you know, better communicators and people that aren't so good. I think we've just got to keep banging away on that. And also too, I think my approach, as I've gotten older and more experienced in this caper, my approach has been to constantly strip it back. So because I learn more, I know more, I would think, a more diverse skill set than I used to, but But what I find myself doing is actually stripping back the messages and the information that I'm giving to people about getting in shape and about, you know, diet, nutrition, I'm stripping it back because they are bombarded by information wherever they turn these days. They never used to be. So when they pick up their phone, when they turn on the TV, when they get in their car, listen to a podcast, it's really easy for people to get overwhelmed by the content, by the information, and sometimes they end up becoming paralyzed because they just don't know where to start. So I think I would, you know, my advice would be for coaches and trainers that deal with these humans is to maybe just check yourself and strip it back a little bit. Stick to the basics. Stick to what you know works. Don't overcomplicate it. Don't over-inform people until they have the experience and the knowledge to cope with that information. Otherwise, they just become overwhelmed.
I really think for coaches, it's about asking good questions. I think, you know, if you want to help a client succeed, rather than telling them everything they need to know, because like Russ said, they're getting bombarded with information. You know, it's not a lack of information as to why people are struggling with their weight or with their goals. It's being able to simplify that information, turn that information into action. And as a coach, I think it's about asking good questions. And then as an individual, it's about asking yourself good questions. You know, it's like, what do I need to achieve this goal? How can I move from A to B? You know, who do I need help from? Or, you know, trying not to get caught up in that noise and just asking good questions.
Yeah. I think sometimes we get in our own way, both the fitness professional and also the clients. And I think what you said earlier, Brad, too, about this, I think because a lot of trainers and coaches, and I put myself in this category too, are inherently insecure. Some of us feel like we've got to impress people, like, and we get with knowledge and language, and you're right, like so many newly qualified people come out of whatever qualification they did, which is great, and now they've got this newly acquired knowledge and language and vocabulary that they then unload on people who don't have that. And then the people are going, all right, well, okay, so now you're talking about shit. One, I don't understand. I don't know what that word means. And what you're doing is you're actually elevating yourself and embarrassing someone else. Like you're creating the opposite of what you should be creating. You're creating disconnection and discomfort. So I think it is that, you know, obviously my PhD is around this stuff, is your ability to understand what it's like to be around you. And I don't want to bang on about that anymore, but just that external self-awareness, what's the me experience like? And is this person comfortable around me? Is this person connected to what I'm saying? And, you know, what is this person's experience in the moment? You know, we all have had people that have come into our respective gyms. We walk into the gym and we might as well be walking into our lounge room or into our bedroom. It's so familiar. It's so comfortable. It's just a thing. Other people walk into the same space and it's fucking terrifying. And they've come, like I literally had a lady once, in fact, she's in one of my books. Her name's Kristen. And she literally came and parked out the front of Harper's on the Pean Highway 20 times and drove away because she finally got the courage and even had walked in the door and halfway up the stairs and left. And it was, I don't know, maybe 25 times before she and you would have thought that somebody had just killed her family. She looked so terrified when she came up. That's a terrible analogy. Killed her goldfish. But yeah, it's you know, helping people to be comfortable in that environment is massive. And also I know, Brad, like you, I love this thing that I'd never heard of. And you said to me a long while ago, we try to make our facility people's third place. Tell us, I love that. Tell us about that.
I was literally just about to, you know, talk about that because, again, for us, you can have the best training program, the best coaches and, you know, the best equipment and whatever. But if people don't feel comfortable when they walk in or they don't feel seen, you know, one of the non-negotiables we have here with our team is to make sure every member feels seen so that when they're in a session, even if there's 40 people in here, that every member feels important and feels seen and validated and, you know, a part of the culture and the community. And what happens then is if they feel good when they're here, they're going to come more often, right? And so the byproduct of coming to the gym more often is they're moving more often, they're going to get the result hopefully. That's the thought process behind it. And for us as a business, we didn't want to be a gym. We wanted to be people's third place. You know, so it's not work. It's not home. It's a third place that they go where they feel welcome. They feel a part of something. They feel supported, you know, and they feel human. And that's how we base everything, every decision and everything we do in our business.
You know what I like about your gym is that, and what I and what I struggle with when I go to different gyms these days and I train is a lot of public gyms now are the opposite of what you just described, Brad. In that, what I mean is, like, where I train, and I'd gladly give them a plug because the owners are great. Matt and Ange, which is Snap, one of my old gyms. Rusty, you and I worked there for a bit, 515 Bluff Road. Matt and Ange, you're great. But what I don't like is that virtually everyone in the gym has headphones on and doesn't talk to each other. Mm. And not only that, which is, and of course, everyone, like, that's not, people can do whatever they want. I realize that. But there's not great energy and that connection isn't there. And fortunately, I train with a couple of mates, so for me, it happens. But I feel like people are missing out, and sometimes I just want to, I don't know, talk to someone in the gym. Not for me, but because I just think it's so good when there's energy in the gym, when there's connection, and there's communication, and you know, when people kind of know each other a little bit, and it makes it not just a place about your body, but also a place about sociology and your mind and producing some happy hormones and creating connection and feeling like you belong. But I guess that's just what it is now.
Yeah, it's a different environment. There's definitely gyms where there's not that connection because it might be a 24/7 model. Not to say they're bad, they're just different. Where people come in, they do put their headphones on. And they do their workout, and then they just literally get out of there. But then there's other gyms, and people hopefully will find them if that's their thing, where there's a lot more of a community, it's a lot more social, there's a lot more interaction, and people go there for that reason. I think, like we talked about earlier, there's a space for everyone. Sometimes people want to go and just, like I say, switch off and do their thing and not be too social because they might have to do that all day long. And other gyms and other models where people are in their own little box at work and they don't get to connect, so they go to the gym to hang it. That's why group exercise works for a lot of people because, you know, some group exercise classes from a strictly physiological perspective or training perspective aren't that flash, but that's not what people are going for. They're going for social connection. And the exercise is almost a byproduct, but they're okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think if people are, you know, as long as people are not getting injured, if they're getting a workout, they're getting a bit sweaty. But you also do make a good point, Rusty, because there are, and I think, you know, people who rock up to the 24-hour gym with their headphones on, do their thing and take off, I think that's great as well. Because for a lot of people, that's what works. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are listening to this right now going, Harps, the last thing I want to do is fucking talk to someone at the gym. So I completely get it. But I think it, you know, it gives us that option. Were you going to say something, Brad?
I was just going to say that, yeah, talking about if someone's out there thinking about, you know, how do I stand out? How do I be different? You know, and they're seeing all these new things popping up and want to kind of, you know, be like just stand out so that people start training with them. It's really just about creating a culture, because a culture and a community isn't something that's going to, you know, get old. And regardless of whether it is Pilates or whether it is 24-hour gym or whether, you know, people are going to buy into that culture. And if you can create a culture that people want to be part of, then you continually have a business. And it doesn't matter about all the white noise, all the stuff going on around you. If you can continue to keep that culture that people enjoy coming to, a big enough group that want to be part of that culture, then you'll be fine.
It is really interesting. We've had this conversation before about, you know, like as everything expands and evolves and improves and everything's dynamic, there's more of this. And it's like a lot of people are looking for the next best thing. A lot of people, like have found what really works for them. But it's funny how people who are looking for the next best thing never actually find the next best thing. Because what's missing for them is not, you know, roller skating marathons or whatever it is. You know, it's just that, what, one, finding an effective workout based on your physiological needs and your goals and where you're at, that's important. Let's find the right workout done the right way in the right environment with the right equipment, of course. But also let's find a place and hopefully some people that, you know, that you like, a place you like going and some people you like being around. And it's interesting. I remember, Russ, I had a guy work for me who, you know, and I remember this was years ago. He came up to me at the gym and I used to let my trainers, eventually we moved from a model where people paid, were employees and then they went consultants. What do you call it, Melissa? What's that term?
Contractor.
Contractors. Thank you. Thank you. And they would pay rent. So they could literally charge whatever they wanted per hour. And like most of my trainers back then, it was probably $60 an hour or something like that and 35 for a half hour. We're talking quite a while ago. But this guy started charging 120, right? And I'm like, okay, fine. You can charge 500. Doesn't matter. But he had no clients at 120, right? He said, I'm going to keep my current clients on this, but all my clients from now, 120. And I'm all for being positive and proactive, but I'm saying to him, well, that's good. And so I said, all right, well, like that's double. He goes, yeah, but I'm worth it. I go, it's like you'd just done some fucking self-esteem workshop and maybe interpreted it the wrong way or something. I'm like, are you? Because there are other trainers better than you and they're $60 an hour. But anyway, okay. So 2 months later, we have another meeting. Mate, how many clients have you got at 120? He's like, well, none right now. I'm like, oh, hang on. So carry the 4 over the 2. So that's 0, right? And I'm not being a smart ass, but it's funny how people will pay whatever they believe you're worth, right? And if I go, right, I'm doing corporate gigs from now, all of my gigs are 10 grand an hour because I'm worth it. Well, that's just words in the air. Like, is any company knocking on the door with 10 grand? That's the point. Yeah. And is any client knocking on your door with $120? You know, so it's about like value is a really slippery construct. And it's really about, it's in the eye of the beholder. It's about the perception of the member. It's, you know, like I know that there are some 24-hour gyms that are $25, $30 a week to be a member of. And for some gyms, that's really good value. Like what's your gym, Rusty, per week? About 20 or something?
$18.
Yeah. So yours is 18 and where I'm at Snap is I think it's about 14. Now, no disrespect to Snap, but your gym's way bigger and way better. So yours is better value, I believe, right? And it's just trying to figure out what's the value proposition in what we do for people, not only on a like what are they paying, but also and what are they getting in terms of resources, but what are they getting as an experience? What's their experience when they come to this place and what are they telling people? You know, so I think that's just something, it's kind of an intangible. What do you think is going to happen? Have you got any ideas or predictions about the next year or five in the fitness industry? You think we're going to see less of something and more of something else, Russ?
Yeah, I think that what this has done is it's definitely forced gym owners or fitness facility owners as a general group. It's forced everyone to have a really good hard look at their model, at how they conduct their business, at what their expense profile looks like. At what their price point is, at what their offering is. I mean, I know it has because it forced me and Tara to do exactly that. You know, we stripped the business right back to bare bones and we said, well, if we're going to survive this, we've got to come out the other side, you know, different and better. We can't just reopen the same old because there are people that we, you know, that have walked away from fitness. We've got to give them a reason to come back. And I think that most gyms and most facility owners have done exactly that. I think there's definitely that there is in this state anyway. I'm not sure around Australia, but certainly in Victoria, there's been some collateral damage. There are certain facilities that are no longer, or they're probably just hanging in there right now, and they're seeing if they can survive and thrive. I'm not convinced. I'm not to be convinced that we're going to all of a sudden abandon all of the things that we did previously and just go, 100% to online stuff. That's not the case. I think, though, we need to be a little bit more diverse. I do online stuff. I do live stuff, and I'll always do a combination of both. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be a specialist in a certain area. Some people are only online, but I think now more than ever, you've got to be very clever about who your target market is, what your offering is, what your skill set is, what your expense profile is, because if there's one thing that I've learned out of all of this, it's to make sure that my business is very healthy and very strong so that it can survive, significant upheavals.
Yeah, we're much the same. COVID in the last 12 months has been awesome in so many ways that it has forced us to take a bird's eye view at our business and go, what don't we need to do, have, or things that we didn't need to be doing, and really strip things back. And in some ways, I think we'll be better off in a sense because of that, and because it's created a lot more other opportunities. I think you're going to see a lot more virtual options now in the industry. We're doing that. We're still doing that virtual training every day. We still have that as part of our business now. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. I think also I'm finding that there's always a bit of a rotating interest in group training, and then that one-on-one personal training. I'm finding we're getting a bigger interest in personal training again. And I think that kind of goes in cycles over the last 12 years. I found when we first started, it was all groups. It was huge. And that's kind of our business in the very early days. And now I'm finding people are wanting that personalized, custom, individual approach as well. So I think that we're going to see another cycle of that. I think the way we market fitness is changing. Again, when I first started, it was very much like, hey, are you unfit and healthy? Come do our 28-day challenge. It was very sort of punching people in the face with a marketing message. And I think now people certainly don't want to be spoken at with that sort of thing. They want to, they want to feel heard and feel supported and spoken with, if that makes sense. Mm. So I think that the way we market fitness is going to change. But I agree with what Russ was saying.
Do you think we have, I'm not sure if this is true, but I heard that we have per capita, we have more gyms and gym-like businesses. So Pilates, yoga, all the variety of fitness-based services and products and businesses, we have more than any other country in the world per capita. In other words, per head of population. If that's not true, we're right up there. I've been to a bunch of countries and we seem to, like, I live on Hampton Street in Melbourne, and there must be 10 fitness businesses on this street: yoga, Pilates, commercial gym, ladies gym, two PT studios, an exercise physiology clinic. And this is all within 800 meters of my house. Like, that's 10 fitness type businesses. I feel like we're cutting the fitness pie like within a millimeter of its life. What do you think?
I think I'd be really interested to know some statistics around how many fitness businesses commence operation and still exist within 5 years. I mean, the general consensus is that most small businesses won't survive or 80% of most small businesses won't survive that 5-year time frame. Mm. Well, when you look at the saturation of fitness businesses in Melbourne and around Australia, pure probability tells you that most of them aren't going to make it, and I believe that that's exactly what happens. And there's a disconnect because we've got more gyms and fitness offerings than we ever have before, as you have said, Craig, previously. Yet we've got a population that's more unwell, more mentally stressed, bigger and larger and more overweight than ever before. So what are we missing? There's obviously some disconnect between the consumer and what we're providing. And I think it goes right back to what we talked about at the start of this, and that is we're not talking to that person and connecting in their mind. We're still trying to connect with just the body.
I mean, I've got three gyms within a stone's throw from us. And it's, again, every month it feels like there's another one popping up somewhere. And I think for businesses, firstly, you need to be clear on your story and your message and really sort of tell that story to your market so that they can buy into that story because like Russ is saying, it's more people than ever who are unhealthy and unfit and all those things. And to help them, we've got to clearly deliver that message to them to help them feel like they can relate to that message and get started with you. I think that's probably the main thing.
And I think also, Rusty, you heard me saying this 25 years ago. I used to say to people, and I've said it forever, there's 168 hours in a week and you're here for three or you're here for two. Mm. So it's good that you come, but this is not the answer. This is part of the answer. This is part of an overall strategy, part of an overall process. Well done. That's amazing. Don't go to McDonald's on the way home, you fucker, right? Because, that we need to, it is great that we go to the gym or we see our trainer or our coach or our Pilates teacher or we do whatever it is. That's great. And everyone should be encouraged and commended for that. It's terrific. But also, when we talk about getting well, getting in, we're not talking about ego or vanity or appearance necessarily. We're talking about, performance and wellness and health and function and longevity and quality of life. The gym matters, of course. So does socialization and connection and lifting shit and a bit of running and all of that. But, when you're not at Brad's or you're not at Russ's or you're not where I train, that's the vast majority of your life. So we need to create this overall, and I know I'm diverging a little bit here, but, we need to create this overall, process, this 168-hour kind of plan or lifestyle that works for us so that the things that we do away from the gym are consistent and aligned with what we do at the gym. So we're not relying on, Brad or Russ or whoever to save us because, oh my God, I've been smashing myself for 4 days. I've got to get back to the gym, which is such a, I killed myself all weekend. Fuck, I've got to get to the gym. Here's an idea. Don't do that on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think this, having these bigger conversations with people around, gyms are amazing and you guys are amazing and all the facilities and resources we've got are great. But ultimately, success or failure still comes back to the user. It still comes back to the member, to the participant, to the human being. I don't know if I should say this. Yeah, I think I'll be all right. She won't mind. We had a lady on our, can I say this, Melissa? You know what I'm going to say?
Yeah, I do know what you're going to say.
Can I say it or not?
Yes, you can.
Well, okay. We're talking about, how we tell ourselves stories, right? So one of the ladies on our mentoring group may not have been a lady, a person. Well, she knows. She's all right with it. I'm not saying her name. But last night we did Q&A, right? So this is 2 hours every Monday night, right? And she goes to me, I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good at that. My one kind of stumbling block is Pringles. Was it Pringles or corn chips?
I think it was Doritos.
Doritos, right? She goes, I honestly don't, I unconsciously eat them and I don't even, I have no awareness till I'm halfway through a bag. I go, bullshit. She goes, and I go, all right, let's talk about that. I go, so you have no, she goes, I have no consciousness. I don't even know what I'm doing till I'm halfway through the bag. So you can imagine how well that went down with me. And I go, so how do they get into your house? What? How do they get into your house? Do they fucking walk there or do you go and get them and buy them? How do they get onto the shelf in your pantry? So here's the truth. You consciously buy these things. You choose them. You take them to the register. You hand them to the girl or the guy. You pay your money. Then you put them in your car. Then you bring them home. Then you put them in the shelf, on the shelf. And then at some stage, however long after that, you go, think I'm going to eat those. Then you get up. Then you walk to that place where they are. Then you open them up. Then you put them in your face, right? That's about 10 conscious steps. There's nothing unconscious, you know? And I think, you know, this conversation, we talk a lot about the nuts and bolts and anatomy and physiology and moving shit and running and stimulating our body. And also importantly, as Brad and you, Russ, have spoken about having a place where people want to go. Yeah, we feel connected and I want to belong and it's my third place. And all of that's great too. But we also need to address what people are doing when no one's looking. Like, what are you doing when you're not at the gym? What are you doing when no one's watching? What are you doing when there is no cheer squad? What are you doing when you're not at your third place? What are you doing, right? And this is I believe this is a really important thing that trainers and coaches and fitness professionals broadly need to start talking with clients, gym members, participants about is managing our mind. And I know I go here all the time, but I genuinely believe it's the key. Is how do I manage my mind, choices, behaviors, habits, thinking? You know, how do I manage that 168 hours a week? How do I do that all the time? How do I be the person that doesn't spend the next years getting in and out of shape and gaining and losing essentially the same weight? What do you think about that, you two?
I think it's, I agree 100%. But I think that, you know, it's everyone's individual, and I've probably started to use this a little bit more as a message following the reopening of gyms back in October, because I kind of threw it back on people a little bit and said, look, I can't help everyone. I can't be the answer to everyone's health and fitness problem. But if there's one thing I've learnt out of everything that happened last year, is that people have to take personal responsibility. So probably what I'm doing now more than ever, when I talk to people who are existing members of the gym or new members and walking into the gym and going, is this place for me? You know, what I'm saying to them is we can do this, we can do that, we have this, we have that, we've got all this stuff that you can use for $18 a week. But at the end of the day, you have to do the work, you have to take the responsibility, and you have to actually want to change something, because if you don't, you'll join the gym and you won't really use it and you won't really stick around. So I think it's a very individual thing, Craig. And it, most people will have to have that light bulb moment. If they've struggled with getting in and out of shape and staying consistent with exercise and good nutrition and all those really boring, unattractive, unsexy things, they have to have their own light bulb moment where they make that decision to act consciously. You know, make the right choices. And I haven't found many trainers, apart from your good self, that can actually impact people well enough and often enough to have that light bulb moment for them.
Mm.
I think it's important to have some understanding for people in that situation, because, you know, that situation with a bag of Doritos, that doesn't happen overnight. That is a culmination of events and repeated, you know, experiences that create that unconscious decision, in commas. And so as a coach, I think it's important to have some understanding and you know, approach that with some kindness with a person like that, and then for themselves, that there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing, you know, it's a combination of things that's happened through their life. And so as a coach, I think it's about supporting and encouraging and empowering that person to, you know, because obviously they've got a story now around that thing. And so as a coach, it's about trying to help them rewrite that story and firstly just be aware of it, you know, go, well, why am I, you know, help them say, well, try and figure out why might you be doing this and making those decisions? Where is that coming from? And how can we try and change that story a little bit? You know, can you stop in the moment and ask yourself a powerful question? Do I need this right now? Or am I trying to avoid something or trying to find something? You know, am I trying to seek a certain feeling, you know? And as a coach, I'm always trying to, you know, get the client to ask themselves those questions to help them adjust those behaviors. And start making more positive steps and then reinforcing those positive steps. So when they do something great, you're like, fucking awesome. You know, early on as a coach, I would get a food diary and highlight everything that was, in commas, bad. You know, you had a Mars bar on Tuesday, highlight that and go, right, you know, we need to fix this. Which I look at that now and go, I hope I didn't fuck anyone up. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a whole approach. Whereas now I'm doing the opposite, highlighting, hey, you got 2 liters of water in on that day. Freaking awesome. You know, people are going to do more of what feels good. You know, if every time they turn up to their coach, they're beating them with a stick. I thought I took that off the hook, sorry.
All right.
If every time their coach, they rock up to their session, the coach is beating them with a stick and telling them what a failure they are and everything they stuffed up, you know, are they going to want to keep doing that? No, but if every time they come and you're going, hey, you did this awesome this week, you got, you know, I think people need more of that in their life. And if they're making crappy decisions, they're missing that support and that encouragement from their circle.
Oh, that's why you're much nicer than me, Brad. That's why people go to you, and that's why people are scared of me and they love you. I agree with you, but no, I do agree with you. I'm all for encouragement and support and empowering people. But my point or my thinking too is you're an adult, you're a grown human. Like, this is not a hard thing. Cancer's hard. You know, physical disability is hard. Violence is hard. Living in a third world country is hard. Your story about your Doritos, it's a story. You know, like, when do we, where's the line between pandering to people and enabling them to keep doing shit that's destructive? And when do we go, in a loving way, nah, that's not okay. You know, that's not based on what you told me you want to do, be, create, change. That's, you know, that's, you're kidding yourself. Like, do we ever get to that point where we're like, you know, you've got to stop giving yourself a get out of jail card. Like, here's the thing, that lady, and it's not about that lady, of course, but any, you know, the person who's stuck on, let's say, chocolate, right? We know that if the person who can't stop eating chocolate, if in some alternate reality, if the next time they ate chocolate, they dropped dead and they knew that ahead of time, well, they're never eating chocolate again. So what that tells us is they actually have the ability to change behavior instantly, right? Well, what gets in the way? What gets in the way is not genetics, not potential, not ability. What gets in the way is story. And the story is always, I'll just have a bit more chocolate and I deserve it and it's okay and I'll stop soon. And it could be beer. It could be cheesecake in my case. It could be anything. And by the way, I'm not saying we should never have beer or cheesecake or chocolate, but I don't know. I feel like in 2021, we're such a mollycoddled fucking culture where we just can't say anything, where like people are doing dumb shit to their body. People are destroying their health. They're making bad decisions. When do we get to the point where we go, nah, I actually think you're being an idiot here? Or do we never get to that point? Or I think you're actually destroying your health. Or do we not do that?
It's an individual choice for the coach. It depends on how you want to, the approach that you want to take, how you feel you can best communicate and connect with people. I think I've developed a little bit of a harder edge over the years because I've tried all the different approaches. I've tried that hard edge. I've tried the understanding sympathetic approach. I've tried maybe a combination of the two. I guess also there's an element of understanding the person. You might know that the softly approach will work with some people because they need that. They need time to kind of come around. And then there's other people that you quickly figure out can actually hear that harder message and respond to it well. So I think you've got to get to know your people, and also I naturally do better with people when I am a little bit more direct. If I'm too softly, my message gets lost. And I know over time that people have said, nah, you're not for me, because my approach doesn't work for everyone. But I'm okay with that. I think I've had more success than failure through it.
I think one of the challenges for you and me is because you and I have trained a lot of athletes, right? And athletes, all you do is go do this, don't do that, run over there, lift that, eat that, jump over this. And they go, yep. For the most part, they go, yep, no worries. And they're very trainable and very coachable. And you don't have to be so diplomatic. And you don't have to worry about a lot of the stuff that you do need to concern yourself with the general population, which is cool. And I understand that. And I think, by the way, I think Brad's exactly right. You know, I don't think you're wrong, mate, at all. I do think we do need to encourage and support people and be compassionate. But the irony is when I am being straight with somebody, I'm coming from a place of compassion because I actually want them to fucking get better. Like my motive is never to intimidate or upset someone. My motive is always to help them get the most out of themselves. And I get frustrated with people that I know are working at a 2 and they're telling themselves they're working at a 9. And people that I know they've got so much potential that they're not using. And I just know that they could do incredible shit. And that is where my frustration comes from. It comes from me wanting them to know how incredible they could be, what amazing results they could create, what's possible for them. And I've just, over the years, I've just seen people go round in circles for a decade just telling themselves these stories. And I go, you know, and essentially, and even friends of mine having the same conversations with me about their body or their food or their training. And I get to the point where I go, mate, I'm not having this conversation anymore. Like, this is just fucking Groundhog Day. Like, you're either going to do it or you're not going to do it, but we're not having this chat again. All right, let's start to wind up. So, Brad, what's going to happen at the Fit Shop over the next 5 years? What's the plan? What's the intention for expansion or direction or change? Or what do you think you're going to do?
We thought we had a clear set plan coming into last year, and things have just kind of been scattered everywhere, right? For us, this next year is really just building on what we have and creating a really different experience. And for us, we want a sort of high-end experience for our members and something that's really professional, really special for them. So it's just developing that. You know, we've changed things. Like it's all about the detail for us. You know, we've put a scent in our gym so that when people walk in, that they it smells a certain way and it feels a certain way. So us, it's about really refining that. Outside of that, it's obviously just building our numbers back up to pre-COVID. And for us, you know, coming when COVID hit, it was a big shock because we'd spent the last 7 years. You know, if you heard our podcast number 27, we spoke about our start to business was pretty hairy. And so we'd spent the last 7 years just trying to build a business and get to a point where we could put savings away. And when COVID hit, we didn't have that. So it hit hard and it scared the shit out of us. So for us, the next couple of years is about looking after our family and building our business up and to a point where we can start putting things away and setting ourselves up as a family. I've got 3 little girls and, you know, you start thinking a lot more seriously about that stuff. But aside from that, yeah, it's just continue to build on our culture and be different, stand out in that way.
How are the girls?
They are amazing. I love them dearly. But if you were asking me at about 2 a.m. last night, oh, it could have been a death in the family, I tell you.
How's my namesake?
Harp, she's good. Grade one. Jesus. Yeah, she's loving it. School, doing great. So, yeah, happy days.
Sometimes I go over to the Cunningham family for food and I just get assaulted by 3 young females who just climb all over me and pull my big nose and stick their finger in my ear and just steal my food and climb on me like spider monkeys. And it's the best thing ever. It's the best thing ever. Rusty, what about what's the next year or 2 or 3 going to look like for you, do you reckon, and Planet Russell?
Yeah,
and so of course, Infinity, of course.
Yeah, at the moment, we're in a bit of a rebuild process. We've still got some members that have sort of disappeared from the fitness scene that we want to recapture and get them back. We lost a lot of our staff through last year because they couldn't wait for the fitness industry to reopen, so they had to go and find employment in other sectors. So from a staffing perspective, we're a bit lean. So the next 12 months, it's all about restaffing our business so that we can be a little bit better and provide a bit more service in that regard, because we just need fresh young faces in the gym. We're training a few people up now, and we want to just invigorate the place and re-energize the place with some young, fresh people that are passionate about what we do. And for me, it's about getting that project put to bed, and then probably trying to take a little bit less of the being a little bit less of the front person and a little bit more of the behind the scenes person.
How's my godson?
He's well, mate. He's in his second year of uni. He's living the uni life because he didn't really get to do that last year. He's training. He's looking after himself. It's interesting because our three boys, you know, they are young, healthy guys or kids. Mitch is a man. He's nearly 21, but he's a type 1 diabetic. So he's got his own health issues, which he manages very well. But they live a healthy life because they have kind of seen mum and dad do it. Mm. And for us in our household, we're not zealots. We don't, you know, we don't feed them organic chicken and all this kind of stuff. It's just regular healthy food. They play sport, they exercise, they hang out in the gym, they do a workout with me. And I think that what we've managed to do is maybe give them a good foundation and an understanding of what it is to just make exercise, as you call it, a non-negotiable. It's just part of what they do.
Yeah.
They actually have fun hanging out with people in the gym and seeing who can do the most chin-ups.
What could go wrong? Hey, Brad, tell people where they can find you, connect with you. They can come down to your, if they live in the Bayside area, to your place, have a look and find a third place.
Yeah, all those things. So, yeah, we're in Cheltenham, Bayside, and then our Euroa country facility, of course. You can follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, The Fit Shop, or myself, Brad, I think it's .Cunningham or something. You'll find me. And we're doing some corporate virtual boot camps as well. We did that through COVID, and we're still doing that as well. So any of their companies out there looking to keep their teams fit and healthy, get in touch.
Perfect. Rusty?
Yeah, so Infinity Health Club is the gym in regional Victoria, and my Instagram's RussellJarrett1. So I, on the side of all of that, I do some education, some workshops and some personal development, professional development for coaches and trainers.
Perfect. What's your website called?
It's just russelljarrett.com.au. Very simple.
Yeah, you don't overthink that, do you?
Nah.
Nah. Do you have a website, Braddles?
Not me personally, yet.
The gym?
Thefitshop.com.au.
All right. And both of these boys are available for consulting and coaching and chatting on the phone with, if you want to get them involved in helping you or your team or your organization or your company in some way. Both of them are superstars. Thanks for chatting with us on the You Project, boys.
Thanks.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Love you guts.
The Australian Fitness Podcast is all about some education, insight, inspiration, motivation, lessons and learnings from myself and the various fitness professionals that I interview on this podcast. To help me get the message across, I'll be tapping into the minds and careers of other successful fitness experts to see just how they go about their trade. I'd love for you, the listener, to connect with the Australian Fitness Podcast, so please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at the Australian Fitness Podcast. If you have any comments or questions or would like to make contact, you can do so at info@australianfitnesspodcast.com.au. Finally, I am a working strength and conditioning coach, so if you want to reach out to me for professional services, programs, education and seminars, you can do so via email russell@russelljarrett.com.au. Thanks for listening.